Good morning. It is 8 o'clock, and it's the 7th of April. We're almost to single digits in the legislative session. Joining us this morning, Vice Chair Olson, Representative Tuck, Representative Gardner, Representative Thomas, and myself, Bob Herron. And we've got a relatively full meeting today. First thing up, we'll have a presentation by Representative Thompson. Then we're going to move on to HJR 27, resolution relocating the CDQ fleet to an Alaska community. And then joining us in the audience is Representative Osterman, and his House Bill 222 will be up. And it's the intent of the chair that, working with the sponsor, that this will be a committee project for the interim. We envision 3-4 meetings around the state to listen to stakeholders and maybe craft together a CS that will start up in January, considering our last promotion and marketing fund and board. And then the last item on the agenda is House Bill 191, Department of Agriculture and Food, and we have a couple of legislators or farm boys in the next committee of resources, and it's my intent to move this bill 191 to resources for an interim project for that committee, if it's okay with the rest of the committee. So, Representative Thompson, a biomass boiler heating systems presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have been in contact with Kaufman Engineering, and towards the end of last week, they sent me a slide program that they have. It's not complete, but we invited them down to see if they could be here this Tuesday morning. Unfortunately, their team and most of their employees are all over the state right now working on projects and couldn't get down here that fast. And so I'm just going to do a little five-minute executive overview of what they've got. They would like to have us come up to Delta and see the project and explain much more in depth than what I'm going to about it. It's a possibility there that if we do that, we could look at the agricultural development around Delta at the same time. But Kaufman Engineering is located there in Anchorage. They have a biomass boiler heating system at Delta Greeley Biomass Project, they call it. There's a lot of biomass boilers right now around the state of Alaska and around Montana, Oregon, and Idaho. Department of Forestry research has been done to show how much biomass is available for burning such projects. The one in Tok is a very successful one also. I know that there's some of the legislators have been to Tok and seen that project. And Kaufman's been dedicated to alternative energy for quite some time. They are installing a lot of wind farms and windmills around the state right now also. But the biomass, there's both residential and commercial systems. They burn pellets and wood chips and even cordwood. There's a feasibility assessment that Kaufman has that we don't have at this time, but they have evaluation of payback on the system, how long it would take to pay for itself, fuel cost comparisons and the sources of fuel, and also that there's a lot of support from the state and federal agencies. Key components of the system are the wood chip quality and delivery. Wood chip quality is directly related to the boiler efficiency, assess the availability of pellets in the future, and they have to do all this assessment before it's going to be a worthy project to put in. Then you have your wood chip delivery. If you can see in some of the pictures there that there's some massive amounts being delivered, what do you do with it? How do you store it? In Alaska, does it have to be a covered or a warm storage? And there's a lot of things involved. Then there's a delivery system, the conveyor systems that are optional, different types. There's the belt conveyors, the screw conveyors, and different things that that they have that they have been looking at and installing. And then the process itself, gasification system, the fixed grate, conveyor grate, and then the step grate, the boiler and the fire tube, and then the hot water, 30 PSIGs. And there's a lot of vendors out there that are trying to get into doing the chips and the delivery of the biomass product to these type of systems. But interestingly enough, on a couple pages later, there's a flue gases. The way that these systems are set up, they run through a cyclone separator or electrostatic precipitator, which takes a lot of the or takes all of the dirty air out. And when it comes out the stack, they have clean air coming out, so it's very very environmentally friendly. Again, they analyze the height of the buildings, how much wind there is around there, and everything to determine on how high the stack needs to be on a large system. And then you have your ash collection and removal from the facility. This can be used in farms and garden soils. It can be put in a landfill because it is clean. And it can be mixed with soil and used in concrete mix also. So this kind of gives you a brief, as I said, overview of this type of a system. They would love to come down. If we can come up there during the summer and take a look at things, they'd love it. But they would like to come down next January and give us a complete overview and show what they have been doing, how they've redesigned a lot of things. The last page shows you a smaller unit that could be used in a house-type system or a small building, smaller office buildings. But that's just kind of an overview, and they would like to come down next January and give us a complete overview with all of the cost comparisons and things. And that's all I had to do today.
Any questions from committee members? Representative Gardner.
Yes, thank you. I have a really basic question. You talk about cordwood pallets or wood chips. What's the difference? Is it about transportation? Is it about density and heat value? Is it about waste? Is it just about uniform size?
A lot of these projects use more of a pellet type system. It's easier to deliver with a conveyor or a screw type feeder. And then your quality of your wood has to be the type that's not going to put out bad emissions. It's got to be dry. It's got to be good wood. So they've got to make sure of those type of things. Is that what you meant?
So if you have, if I might, Mr. Chair, if you have a fairly sophisticated system, it needs a uniformity of product going in order to function smoothly. Yes. Is there a greater heat value from pellets compared to just having cordwood?
To tell you the truth, I am not an engineer, so I can't really give you an exact answer on that. I think that those pellets types are considered to have a better quality of heat and less emissions. They're more compact and compressed so that they can put out a better product or better heat.
Thank you.
Representative Thompson, I look forward to a potential trip to the Delta area, but of course, in January, I can work with Representative Munoz. I see that there is a Juno application, and so we get a tour as well. So, Representative Tuck, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment also is we had a presentation last year in the Energy Committee on the barley that's being grown and making barley chips and the fuel efficiency for that and the ability to deliver the sacks. You know, if we were to have barley, these type of heating systems throughout the state, the delivery mechanism also. And so I guess my question is when they do come to visit us next January and present to this committee, that they also present to the Energy Committee as well?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Thompson.
I asked Kaufman Engineering because I had heard about another biomass project that's going on down there. Fort Greeley is supposedly right now putting in a barley burning system, and Delta does grow one heck of a lot of barley, and apparently it is a very good product for using in that type of a system. And Fort Greeley supposedly is installing one at the present time, not from Kaufman. They don't know who it is that's doing it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, at this time, let's move on to the resolution. Katie, if you could come forward, and for everybody's information, including the people that signed up in Seward, is Representative Seaton sends his apologies. He is working on other legislation and state affairs, but Katie is here, more than capable to present the resolution. So, Katie, if you could put yourself on the record and begin your presentation, please.
Thank you. Good morning, Katie Kester, staff to Representative Seaton. HGR 27 is a resolution to support bringing the fleet home and Alaskanizing our fishing fleet. The committee saw a really great presentation last week of this initiative by Seward City Manager Philip Oates and Mayor Willard Dunham, who are both online to contribute their comments. So in the interest of time, I won't go over all the details there. A draft of this resolution at that meeting was handed out, and many of you signed on as co-sponsors, so I'd like to thank you for that. And it recognizes that this is a an effort that's about economic development in all of Alaska and not one particular community. To give you a brief overview of what this resolution supports, it supports the initiative of Coastal Villages Region Fund, Alaskanizing their fleet to bringing their fleet to Seward, Alaska as their home port. Coastal Villages Region Fund is a CDQ group. CDQ groups were developed in the 1990s by Alaska's congressional delegation. It stands for Community Development Quota. This established six groups in the Bering Sea, six CDQ groups in the Bering Sea, and gave them a stake in the Bering Sea fisheries. This is just another one of the really amazing things that our Senator Ted Stevens did for our communities, and it really has had a positive impact on Alaska communities. The six CDQ groups represent 65 Bering Sea communities who all have a percent ownership in that fisheries. And the CDQ groups are required to reinvest their profits in Bering Sea communities. And this provides economic development, jobs, and hope in these villages and communities. Coastal Villages Region Fund, which is the specific company that we're talking about today, is the largest Alaska-owned and Alaska-based fisheries company. And they gave some nice comments last week about how large they are, but I believe that some of them are worth repeating. Coastal Villages is expected to have $75 million in seafood sales in 2011. They have an impressive fleet of vessels. They spend $5 to $10 million every year to maintain those vessels, $20 million in moorage for Seattle, $2 million just to fill the tanks on their 18 vessels one time, and $10 million each year in crew. And that includes entry-level jobs at $50,000 a year and skipper jobs at around $300,000 a year. So we're talking about good jobs. And they want to take more of their jobs and their people back to Alaska. They want to support the Alaskan economy, and their employees are Alaskans and want to be based out of Alaska. And, you know, the question certainly comes up, well, how come a Bering Sea community can't provide this service? And there are requirements for a fleet that large. Coastal Villages did a statewide survey, and Seward, Alaska was the one community that met all of those requirements. Those requirements are a year-round ice-free port, road, rail, and air access, space for a harbor and uplands development, and a maritime licensing facility. And these are all things that Seward has. Ice-free port, we've got Alaska Railroad road access, and Ted Stevens International Airport is very close in addition to a local airport. There's lots of space for development. There's a dry dock, and Avtech is located in Seward, which is has a really fine maritime training and licensing facility. Just like to emphasize that this resolution, which supports moving Coastal Villages Region Fund to Alaska and Alaskanizing our fleet, is really about economic development and about the small steps we can take to diversify our economy. I'll just point out what's in your packet. There's a letter from Coastal Villages, which really explains their initiative well. There's an engineering study on how the Port of Seward can accommodate Coastal Villages. And there's a resolution of support from the Kenai Peninsula Borough, from the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District, and a letter from our congressional delegation. And the reason why I kind of list the packet for you is because I just want to express how much work and thought has already gone into this initiative to bring the fleet home. The City of Seward has funded a preliminary study. The Corps of Engineers has made a preliminary finding that it's economically feasible, and Coastal Villages has done their study to determine Seward as the best port. So as I stated before, we do have the City of Seward online, and I believe someone from Coastal Villages as well, and I'm available for questions.
Okay, Representative Gardner for for Katie?
Thank you. Three things. One, Alaskanizing. It's a fun word. We kind of make up words. Everybody knows what it means. If it's not a word, it could be. Secondly, some of us, maybe all of us, received an email today from somebody in Seward with expressing concern about the impact that this might have on Seward and wanting to be sure there was a public process. And so since the city of Seward has already paid for the initial engineering, I'm wondering if there was a process for that decision-making in which Seward, and maybe the city can answer that. Because, I mean, I think it's legitimate. I'm very excited about this whole proposal. I've already signed on as a co-sponsor. But I do want to just see what's been done or what's anticipated to be done.
Sure.
And then the third question, which Chair Herron alluded to at the close of our last discussion, is a word of caution about anticipating efforts from Seattle to retain this fleet in their home port, and I'd just like to know what you know about that or what we might look for and anticipate ways to defend this.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, the preliminary study that the city of Seward did was a very small, I think it was a $5,000 study that really just said, okay, should we even be daydreaming about this? And they actually have a capital budget request for $400,000 to do a very detailed study that would include looking at permits and scoping and public meetings and really take an in-depth look at exactly how that process would move forward. And I believe the public would be engaged at that point. And your second question, as far as pushback from the Port of Seattle, I think it's the responsibility of Alaskans and the legislature to advocate for our interests, and we hope to have coastal villages as well advocating. So I think that job will develop as it moves along and the initiative develops.
Thank you, Representative Gardner, for reminding of us that. And it was a cautious caution because, obviously, any fleet, but the fleet of this size and importance to any economy is just tremendous. So, the challenge will be huge. But it's late in the session. I can't pass up an opportunity. When you talked about Alaskanizing, some would say this is a Seatonizing. So, are there any other questions for Katie? At this time, we'll go to public hearing, and let's travel to, I believe it's Anchorage. Neil Rodriguez, are you online?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yes, Neil, if you could state your name, your affiliation, and testimony that you wish to provide.
Regulatory Manager for Coastal Villages Region Fund, and I'd like to answer any questions anyone would have regarding anything that Coastal Villages is planning with this project.
Okay, Neil, I don't see any at this time, but maybe we could stand by and maybe after the city manager and of Seward and the mayor, there may be a question or two for you at that time. So. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, let's travel south to Seward, and whether it's the mayor or the manager, please step forward and begin your testimony after identifying yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Lord Dunham. I'm the mayor of Seward, and I thank you for this opportunity to speak again on this initiative, and especially thanking Representative Seaton and those involved that set this resolution 27 up, joint resolution. This is a unique opportunity, I believe, and as we stated to you before, the opportunity that an industry the size of this one wishes to, has notified Alaska that they would like to move their operation lock, stock, and barrel to Alaska. I'm not surprised that you got a letter on our notice from someone in here in Seward talking about their concern. I would tell you that we have passed two different resolutions. We have held public hearings on the move, and the area we are discussing is an industrial area that has been established and affected for well over 30 years. So some of them have said that it was taking away a personal space that they walked their dog, matters of this nature. But after all, it has, for the area that have been laying open, have, of course, been open to the public, and they've been, even in some cases, used for beach fishing and around. But the area is a 476-acre industrial tract, and that's what it's been established for many years. That's why the utilities are in the lake there, the shipyard, the uplands where they work on the boats, docks, and wharfages. So, yes, as in all things, Alaskan and in small communities, there is always someone who is not especially thrilled every time you make something new. Not necessarily this one, we expect it, but we have vetted it considerable. All of three news medias in our town have spent considerable time talking about it, and we think it's a wonderful idea, and most of the town is utterly thrilled that we have such an opportunity. All I can tell you is that every day we find and we get more things accomplished to be ready to move quickly on this operation. And yes, Representative Gardner, we fully expect Seattle to go bananas, as anybody would when they decide they're going to lose a major operation in this. If Coastal Village is correct, Alaska can look forward in the next 15 years of having all six of them here, which could be by that time a fleet of somewhere around 200 vessels. So, yes, and I appreciate you hearing this resolution, and I hope that you'll pass it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is Philip Boats, City Manager of Seward. If I could just add some comments to those of the mayor. I would like to address both of those questions from Representative Gardner as well. As the mayor stated, we've had two resolutions, one establishing this as a priority as a state legislative priority, but the second one, a comprehensive resolution outlining all of the reasons that this is good for Coastal Villages, good for Seward, and good for Alaska. And that public process obviously will continue. The first phase of this project that will meet Coastal Villages' needs will be built on approximately $70 million of infrastructure that already exists in an area that has already been permitted. That's the most suitable area for them, but also it's the easiest to go through the permitting process, which, as many of you know, is one of the most difficult steps in any major project. So we will continue to meet and hear the concerns on both sides of this issue here in the city of Seward. As far as the efforts from Seattle, we've discussed this at the national level with the congressional delegation, and many of you know that Congressman Don Young was involved with the CDQ effort early on, and he's very excited about this project. But with him, we discussed a possible interaction from Seattle, and we did so with the other congressional members as well. And we think that Seattle will have less of an impact on this initiative because we're not asking for federal dollars for this phase one. Now, if the other five CDQ groups decide to come to Alaska, which we anticipate they will, they may come to Seward or they may come to other ports. And at that point in time, there may be some federal dollars involved. Certainly the Corps of Engineers would take a bigger role, and maybe even in project management. And in many cases, permitting might be required from the ground up. In those cases, we think there might be a greater impact from those in Seattle. But for this Coastal Villages Region Fund, we think that's manageable because it's an Alaskan project to Alaskanize the fleet, and I like that word as well. The ultimate funding for the project would be probably be some combination of geo bonds at the state level, revenue bonds at the local level, and maybe even public-private financing, some type of partnership to make this happen. In closing, we had the chance to provide a comprehensive a bit of testimony last week, and I'd like to thank the entire committee and the leadership of Chairman Herron for considering and taking the lead on this initiative in the legislature. Of significance in your packet is the letter from the congressional delegation signed by Senator Murkowski, Senator Begich, and Congressman Young, fully in support of this initiative. This is a letter that was sent to the governor. In our meetings with the executive branch, with the legislature, and with our congressional delegation, there has been wide and enthusiastic support for this initiative. And again, I would like to thank the committee for considering the House Joint Resolution 27. Thank you very much.
Thank you, General Oates. A couple of comments is that it's the intent of the chair in a piece of legislation following House Bill 222 is that we're going to have interim hearings on that legislation. So on behalf of the committee, I will accept your invitation that maybe we can put together a trip to Seward so that we could get a field visit on this potential site. The second comment is, General, is I guess briefly, could you share the meaning of the letter that was signed by the congressional delegation that Representative Seaton and Katie have put in our backup? As a general that did a lot of projects for the military, what does this letter mean to people that read it?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I think this letter shows that certainly an individual that was key in establishing the CDQ groups sees this as fulfillment of the vision that was, established by a different Senator Murkowski, but leadership of Senator Ted Stevens and also Congressman Don Young, to first of all Americanize the fishing fleets that fished in our waters, which were primarily dominated by foreign vessels. Secondly, to provide some of the quotas to the communities surrounding those prime fishing areas. Thirdly, to allow those groups that were established to reinvest their profits into education and growing the industry here in Alaska. And then finally, to Alaskanize this fishing fleet. And that's one reason they're so excited now. They all see this, the fulfillment of a vision that started back in the 1970s and continued through the 90s and up until today. It's remarkable that this is support goes across the aisle. Enthusiasm from all in our delegation. And if you look at their letter, it outlines the background, the reasons for that support. And then they conclude by saying, we hope that this project may act as a catalyst for the consideration by other CDQ groups to home port in Alaska. Such a move would result in tens of millions of dollars in new annual income for Alaskan vendors, more revenues for the state of Alaska, and local job creation. We look forward to working with you in the future to help Alaska maximize the value of the federal fisheries for its residents. And again, signed by all three of our congressional delegations. So, Mr. Chairman, I hope this answers your question. And the mayor nodded when you were speaking about an invitation and wanted me to tell you that the door is open for your field visit and would welcome it at any time.
Thank you, General. Is there any questions for the General? Representative Foster?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very much in support of this resolution. I'm just curious, how does the resolution help to make this move? Is that, I had heard a little bit about there's going to be some permitting needed and maybe going after some federal dollars. Is it that or are there other reasons?
Through the chairman to Representative Foster, first of all, it shows there's solid support at all levels for the project, which always helps you and any initiative for permitting. Secondly, it shows the legislature at large, certainly the Senate, the strong support that exists in the House of Representatives, which will help us with our capital budget request this year that we need to to accomplish the next phase of the planning to include the engineering, the geotech work, the permitting, the full economic analysis, so we'll know, you know, in fact, what we're getting into, and it'll also establish a firm cost for the project. So it's important in that way, and I don't think we can discount the importance of the letter to the governor himself. You know, certainly to have this strong of endorsement from the federal level back to the governor is an unusual step. You don't see that very often, and we all know that it's one thing for the legislature to put something in the capital budget, but then we've got to convince the governor to keep it in the capital budget. So therein might be one of the greatest benefits of this letter.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead, Mayor.
I would like to add one other thing. The fishing organizations from around the state have caught us. Yeah, the Alaska Fishermen's Association, and now we were just notified that there will be the Fishermen's News is also going to do a big article on this too, and they've been very enthusiastic about it. So it's very heartwarming to hear and see all the people that have contacted with us. They're so much in favor of this, of an opportunity that has been talked a lot of in the past, but now looks like it could become a reality. I really appreciate this, and I appreciate your questions, and I look forward to your visit.
Thank you, Mayor. Okay, see no other questions for our Seward delegation. Go back up to Anchorage. Neil, is there any closing comments that you'd like to provide to the committee?
I just thank you guys for taking the committee for taking this up for consideration. You know, this has been a long time goal for the CDQ program, and I think this is a great opportunity and could be the beginning of a great thing for the fishing industry.
Okay, Neil, if you could pass on a message from myself and my committee members to Morgan and John Mark, good job, and look forward to visiting with you as this project goes along.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anybody in the committee room that wishes to testify on this? Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Alan Osterman, representative from District 36, Kodiak Island, and part of the Lake and Penn area. My age should tell you that I've been around long enough to watch this process go forward. As a commercial fisherman in the 1960s, to be crab fishing and watch a Russian trawler come dragging through and take our pots away. To watch the Chinese come through and do the same thing, the Japanese, because they could come within 3 miles of our shores and fish. And so it was a very dynamic time when we Americanized the fisheries, and when we Americanized the fisheries through the congressional action, that's what we did. And we didn't Alaskanize it. We Americanized it. And when you look at the fisheries today in Bristol Bay, the Bering Sea, and the value of that as an Americanized fishery, that money, the fleet, 90% of it's all done in the Lower 48 in the Seattle, Oregon area. And when you're talking about a fishery that's got a value of somewhere between $2.3 and $2.5 billion just in that portion of Alaska, and that money flowing outside the state of Alaska and making other areas rich economically and jobs and everything else that goes with it, to now turn around and say we're going to Alaskanize the fishery and bring those fleets back to Alaska or station them in Alaska, it's mind-boggling when you really get into it and start looking at potentially of having all of those CDQ groups bring all of that fleet, all those jobs into Alaska. I know that there's been some discussion already with the Bristol Bay CDQ group of bringing those fleets back to Kodiak, or back to Alaska. So I stand, or I sit here, very strongly supporting this resolution, and hopefully we'll get it out and move it forward, and we'll look at what the long-range value is going to be to the state when you look at that type of thing, particularly since it only involves just the Bristol Bay and the Bering Sea area as the impact of the dollar value. And obviously, the Gulf of Alaska was not included in that CDQ program when it originally started. And that area of Alaska, which was living in third world conditions, and some portions might be towards the interior are still in those conditions, but the coastal zones have really benefited and have made out very well because of that. And I appreciate you moving this bill forward.
Any questions for the majority leader? Seeing none. And is there anyone else in the audience in the committee room that wishes to testify on this resolution? Doctor, is there anyone else online? Okay, public testimony is closed. Bill is the resolution is for us. Discussion. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really enjoyed the presentation the City of Seward did for us the last committee hearing, I believe, and I think it's a great vision, a great plan. I don't have any sympathy for Washington when they try to tax Alaskans for transported goods up here. I think this is a great opportunity to keep money in the state of Alaska. It kind of saddens my heart that Washington benefits so much from our fishing industry and our economy up here. I think it's about jobs. I like that it's about creating not only it's creating new industries to support the fishing industry as well. We talk about the shipyards, we talk about training, we talk about all the stuff that goes into supporting this fleet. So I'm wholeheartedly in support of this resolution, and I would like to put my name on as a sponsor as well.
Thank you, Representative Tuck. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to mention for the benefit of the folks here that the power and impact of the CDQ program on Western Alaskan communities for all the small villages out there that receive not just the jobs but the money that each CDQ puts into each village. It's just amazing. And so I think to be able to spread that to not just Western Alaska but to try and get that to other parts of the state, I think, as well is just a win-win situation. So thank you.
Okay. Other comments? Representative Tuck, since you're the newest co-sponsor, would you like to move this resolution from committee?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we pass HGR 27 version M out of committee, Mr. Chair.
With individual recommendations and any fiscal notes?
Yes, with individual recommendations, any recommendations and the fiscal, any attached fiscal notes, Mr. Chair.
Any objections? Seeing none. On to the next stop. Thank you very much. Okay. Let's take a brief at ease. We'll sign the committee report. And then Mr. Astreed, please put yourself on the record and your presentation, please.
Representative Alan Osterman, District 36, Kodiak.
Astreed Liovano, staff to Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing the bill today. I'm going to give a kind of brief overview of why we're here today with this bill, and then I'll have Astreed go through the sectional for you to make you understand the bill a little bit better. When I got back into the legislature a couple years ago on Finance Committee, and one of my subcommittees was the Department of Community Commerce and Economic Development. And in going through that process in the Finance Committee with that department, I quickly understood that we as Alaskans don't necessarily market Alaska as a business destination. We don't go out and try to encourage other businesses to come to establish new businesses in Alaska and bring new dollars to the state of Alaska. So I started thinking about how that could be done. And out of that came this bill where it's a basically turns out to be a promoting Alaska fund or promoting Alaska board. After I got to looking at how I could get a board together that would actually work on this marketing Alaska, it brought every other industry to the table as well, whether it was tourism, seafood, mining, agriculture, all of these areas across the state that we should be marketing and trying to get new businesses into the state of Alaska. What fell out of this bill, though, was my initial concept of how I get the department, give the department money to go out and market Alaska as a business destination, because we can't, as legislators, can't tell the department what to do and all the rest of us. We could write a law, or we could, you know, and create funding source for the department to go out and do that, but it would be separate from actually the industry itself that would do the marketing, such as ATIA or ASME or any mining industry or something like that. And so we're going to come back to that hopefully next year and have that conversation about how we can get the department to actively pushing Alaska as a business destination, along with, of course, the other industries that are currently in Alaska that could be bringing new money into the state. And so this bill that you have before you really is a starting point. This bill that's before you is a methodology of bringing all the industries to the table and figuring out how we can fund the marketing efforts that they want to do for their individual industries. Whether, like I say, whether it's mining or agriculture, seafood, tourism, whatever it is. And I want you to keep that in mind because, and I recognize a long time ago that when I introduced a piece of legislation, that once it's out of my hands, it's committee's legislation then, and it's not mine. And that I anticipate there will be a number of changes to this. Again, the information that I put in here is sort of our starting point, and I would hope that, and as the chairman has indicated, he plans on holding several meetings over the interim, bringing the industry to the table and talking about exactly what it takes for those industries to market themselves in Alaska. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to turn it over to Street and have her kind of go through the sectional so you understand the bill a little bit better.
Morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Astrid Liovano. You should have before you a memorandum dated April 1st from Terry Bannister, and it just does what I'm going to do right now, just goes through the sections of the bill. I'll try to go slowly so you can follow along. Section 1 of the bill of HB 222 amends statute to add a new Alaska Promotion and Marketing Board to the list of boards and commissions that are subject to public official financial disclosure chapter. Section 2 adds sections to create the Alaska Promotion and Marketing Fund and the Alaska Promotion and Marketing Board. Section 4433-950 creates the fund and directs the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to administer the fund in consultation with the board. 4433-955 identifies the money that is in the fund and states that the fund is not a dedicated fund. On page 2 of the bill, section 4433-960 states the purpose of the fund, which is to promote and market industries that broaden the economic base of the state and that provide jobs and business opportunities for Alaskan residents. Section 4433-965 states that the fund money shall be used, subject to appropriation, to make grants to private entities for projects that promote the fund purpose and to pay for the administrative costs of the new sections. Section 4433-970 establishes certain requirements for grants from the funds, addresses the type of entity that may be a grant recipient, addresses the matching requirements, and in the bill right now it states that it requires a 50% match of the grant amount. It also sets a 75% maximum amount per fiscal year for grants to entities that in established industries, which leaves 25% for emerging industries. Section 4433975 establishes the board, tells you the number of members, appoints who's going to appoint the members. As of now, the bill says the governor is going to appoint the members. Section on page 3 of the bill, section 4433980, the memo is wrong. It says 990, but it should say 980. It lists the board duties. It includes developing a methodology for prioritizing the projects. It identifies criteria for evaluating the achievement of the fund purpose for the projects, determines the grant applicant eligibility. On page 4 of the bill, section 4433985 authorizes the board and DCCED to adopt regulations for the new sections. And then 990 defines the terms for the new sections. And then Section 3 repeals sections relating to marketing tourism contracts and campaigns. And Section 4 repeals, sunsets it on July 1st of 2019. Section 5 provides the appointment of the first members of the board within 1 month of the effective date with staggered terms. So it's just the transitioning of how this would be implemented. And Section 6 on page 5 makes this act effective January 1st, 2012, but as Representative Osterman has mentioned, this is going to be hopefully an interim project, so that that's not valid.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Reed. Before we get asked the sponsor and staff questions, Deb, is please note for the record that Representative Munoz has been with us for several minutes, and then for her information, we'll sort of explain the agenda. Is Kathy, is that at Representative Thomas gave a brief biomass presentation that will have a full one in January. But in concert with House Bill 222, we're going to be traveling around the state to your community, this region, the Southeast region, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. And then we would tie it into a trip to Delta for a possible look at this biomass boiler. And then HJR 27, which we did pass from committee, the community of Seward has invited the committee down for a field trip to look at this potential project. And so when we're in Anchorage, we'll try to tie 222 with a trip to Seward. And then 191, it's intended the chair to move that to the Resources Committee because the chairman and one member represent that region and the agricultural region. And maybe we could tie it in with a trip to Delta on Representative Thomas's project. So that's why we structured the day today. So that's how it's all been tied together. And essentially 222 would be the vehicle to really hear from stakeholders on this proposed legislation that Representative Osterman has brought forward. Mm-hmm. So that's okay. The plan. So back to the Majority Leader and staff. Is there questions for them? Representative Tuck?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to remind for the record that Neil Foster was also here for a while. I don't know if you caught him earlier. So.
Well, he was on record 3 or 4 times. So.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I think Deb got that. Thank you. Questions for the sponsor, Representative Gardner?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'm not sure that I fully follow the explanation of Section 3. And in particular, I'm looking at the repealed statute. Do I understand that this sort of repeals our relationship and funding structure for ATIA?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Gardner, that's one thing I wanted to clarify before we're done here anyway. No, it does not. Let me back that up. Yes, it does repeal the current methodology that ATIA uses as a qualified trade association through the Department of Commerce and Economic Development in the contract. But it moves that, if you read the bill totally, it moves that qualified trade association concept over to the new board that we would create. So instead of the ATIA going to Commerce and with a get a contract, ATIA will go through the board to get the funding that they need.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. And something similar would apply for ASME and also under House Bill 222, the funding would be different depending on whether it's an emerging or an established industry.
Yes, it would apply to any trade association or any group that wants to market Alaska, you know, or promote Alaska, and it could be anybody. I mean, the details, again, this is a starting point. And so the details of who would qualify to get grant money from the state of Alaska for marketing Alaska would be worked out through the board. And then that's the process that I would anticipate that over the interim that the groups would come and say, okay, this is what we need as part of the criteria. And then you as a committee would lay out a lot of that stuff for the board to put when you put the board together and the criteria that they would use to, and you had a question in reference to funding.
I don't know. The answer, anyway, it's not pending.
Representative Gardner, follow up.
Thank you. So recently we heard about a meeting, I believe it was in Sitka, for from rural communities that were interested in promoting tourism of a different sort than the focus of ATIA. So a group like that could come to this board and get funding, potentially a grant for promoting their projects.
Currently, the way that the bill is written, yes. And again, I anticipate that there's going to be a lot of discussion about that as to what the scope of some of a larger organization, a statewide organization such as ATIA would be versus a smaller group of Sitka tourism and native groups, or even the there's a environmental tourism component also that is interested in trying to market themselves, which is outside of the spectrum of the overall arching ATIA program. So, yeah, I would anticipate in my view that these groups can come forward and ask for the funding sources to do it. And obviously the criteria that is set up through the board would be how it would be handled.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Just for clarification, again, ASME is would be an organization also competing for these funds.
As far as I'm concerned, yes, they are currently an organization that comes to the state and gets funding for marketing. It's a little different in the way that the ATIA has been handled. The ATIA has been separated by itself with statutory language that sets them up on how they get their funding from the state of Alaska. ASME just asks for it and gets a smaller percentage than what the ATIA has been receiving, but it's just a grant funding source. And I envision to get, as most of us have seen, the whole argument we've had year after year after year about marketing Alaska funds, that we would separate it and get that out of the hallways, out of the argument, and put it into this board that would actually do the work, sit down with each industry and set the funding source. Now, the only difference here is that every year we as legislators are still going to have to put funds into the marketing board fund, and we'll have to fund it. And if you look at trying to expand the marketing effort for Alaska or the promoting Alaska effort, I anticipate we'll spend more money in the long term through this methodology than we do with the constant fighting and bickering that we do over ATIA funding, because I think that this gives opportunities of other people to come forward. And I anticipate that somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 to $40 million a year would be put into this fund and then marketed for marketing Alaska, and it would encourage people to want to get out and actually market Alaska and bring new business to the state.
Okay. Just for everyone's information, Juanita Ayers is here from the department to answer any questions. And as well, we have Deb Hickok that is planning to testify. So questions, Representative Foster, the sponsor?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I applaud all efforts that are made towards diversifying Alaska's economy, and especially in the area here of economic development and emerging tech industries and markets. And so my question regarding that would be, I see in the bill here that the board would be responsible for defining what an emerging market might be, and I'm just curious if you've gotten any preliminary ideas in terms of maybe how that might be done or even how the process of doing that might be done.
No, I don't. I know that in the seafood industry, when we had some real troubled times when the farm fish came along and it drove the price of pink salmon down to five cents a pound, the federal government came along with about $50 million in total funds, and we did a program of trying to bring that industry back, and we've successfully done that. Part of that was matching grant programs that we put out, and new small industries that could develop new industries in Alaska. At that point in time, we gave them more money than we would to an established processing, for example, that was already here, so that they could a percentage more money, so that they could actually add new businesses, add new products, create new things that were going on. And out of that, that's the only thing that sits in the back of my mind as far as emergency stuff. I think that if we give them the incentive, we may see more type of businesses that get started.
Okay. Other questions for the sponsor or staff before we go to public testimony? Thank you. Okay. At this time, Deb Hickok, Fairbanks.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Deb Hickok, and I'm speaking today on the proposed HB 222 in my capacity as chair of the board of directors for the Alaska Travel Industry Association, ATIA. Can you hear me fine?
Yes, you're coming in loud and clear.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair and committee members and sponsors of the bill for engaging in a dialogue about the economic development of our state. At ATIA's board retreat this past November in Kodiak, we had the opportunity to hear Representative Osterman broadly outline his ideas for economic development and be assured that the ATIA board shares both his and the committee's passion for growing and diversifying Alaska's economy. So I'd like to just speak to the ATIA board and our thoughts in relationship to this bill and just say, in tandem with the more than 1,100 businesses that ATIA represents, we work hard together to develop and market Alaska as a travel destination. The ATIA board repeatedly and extensively discusses the ATIA marketing committee, its structure, and its effectiveness. And the consensus of the ATIA board, as recent as last week, is consistently in support of the marketing committee structure. Because the committee structure gives both large and small Alaska tourism businesses that are diverse in both geography and business model a direct voice in Alaska's tourism marketing program through experienced professionals in the industry. But that said, the ATIA board has also committed to further scrutinizing the marketing committee and the program and to make changes if the end result would be an even better tourism marketing for Alaska. So to that end, the ATIA board is enthusiastic about collaborating with the legislature and administration. What we would suggest, an independent audit by a qualified third party of our marketing committee structure and programs, and we hope that this scrutiny would be somehow incorporated into the interim process that's being discussed. As you already discussed this morning, I'd like to also echo that Section 3 of this proposed HB 222 that would repeal the QTA, ATIA statute, we think is very premature and would have serious negative or potentially negative consequences for Alaska's travel industry, as well as some of the match requirement. I mean, we would urge you to go through the interim process, listen to stakeholders, and seriously discuss some of these things with them before actually acting on it through this bill. So just we look forward to working with you on an interim process that fosters collaboration in the best interests of Alaska's travel industry and thus Alaska's economy. And I just want to reiterate that the ATIA board shares your goal and your passion for effectively developing and diversifying the economy of Alaska, and that we're all in this together, and we look forward to working with you in the interim.
Are there any questions for Deb? Seeing none, Deb, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to, as a committee, we're going to go around the state, and Fairbanks is one of our destinations, so we look forward to visiting with you when we're up there.
We'll be here. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone else online that wishes to testify? Seeing none. Anyone in the room, committee room, that wishes to testify on this proposed legislation, House Bill 222? Okay. Seeing none. We'll set this aside. This will become an interim project. And before we move on to the next one, Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had heard in reference to Deb's remarks in reference to an audit, I've heard that yesterday was the first time I heard that they were looking at maybe having an audit done. My bill has nothing to do with ATIA and the ability for them to market Alaska or the job that they've done marketing Alaska. I know that there has been discussions among other legislators in reference to questioning the efficiency of ATIA and how they work. I want to make it very clear, though, that 222 does not have anything at all to do with ATIA and how they operate or how they work or the makeup of the board or the makeup of their marketing committee. 222 is just a new structure of how we fund marketing in Alaska, and it's got nothing to do, and in my view, the state of Alaska has got nothing to do with ATIA and the makeup of that board. They're a private sector entity that works towards marketing Alaska, and the state of Alaska is not tied to how that board operates and works. All we do is fund their fund the marketing effort that they make. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Osterman. Look forward to working with you over the interim and vision of 3-4 meetings and around the state and respective committee members' communities. So with that, this time we're going to move on to House Bill 191, and Vice Chair Olson will chair the balance of the committee meeting this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome back, Jane.
Thank you, Chair Olson. For the record, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Steve Thompson, and I'm briefly going to walk you through the sectional on this bill. It was introduced previously, and the purpose of the bill is to create a new Department of Agriculture and Food. Sections 1 through 18 of the bill address Title III, which is agricultural animals and food, and specifically Chapter 5, which is the duties of the commissioners. It puts the duties relating to agriculture and food under the purview of the commissioner of the Department of Agriculture and Food. The sections in Chapter 5 also address the powers and duties of the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation, because they have now been split out. The chapter also leaves retail food establishments and fish products and fish product establishments under the purview of the Department of Environmental Conservation. The new Department of Agriculture will have duties overseeing animals and animal products, the state veterinarian, noxious weeds, invasive plants, agricultural pest management, the grading and classification of agricultural products, inspections, product violations, elk farming, food securities. There are also in Title 17, the new Department of Agriculture and Food will assume duties over federal crop insurance contributions, agricultural and industrial fairs, farm-to-school program, the Plant Material Center, dealing with controlled livestock districts, brand marks, bees, beekeeping, and organic food. Sections 19 through 20 direct the commissioner of the Department of Agriculture and Food to appoint an employee of the department as the director of the Board of Agriculture and Conservation. This board oversees the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund. It manages its assets and ensures that property is disposed of for the maximum return of the state. Sections 39 through 70, 5 deal with Title 17, which is Alaska Food and Drug. Chapter 20, which is the Alaska Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, deals with the Commissioner of Department of Agriculture and Food having the duty to set standards, regulate, label, inspect, embargo, condemn, relabel, enforce, and fine related food products, with the exceptions of fish and fisheries products, retail establishments, which will stay under the purview of DEC. Sections 76 through 77 make conforming changes. Section 78 deals with the clearing and draining of agricultural land. Sections 79 and 82 also make conforming amendments. Section 83 adds a new chapter to establish the new Department of Agriculture and Food. Sections 84 and 85 adds Department of Agriculture and Food to the agencies enforcing 1720, and it would fall under the Administrative Procedures Act. Section 85 repeals certain laws that will no longer be needed. Section 86 authorizes the Department of Agriculture and Food, DEC, and DNR to begin adopting, amending, and repealing regulations necessary to implement this act. And Section 88 and 89 set forth the effective dates of this act. Our office has been in communication with farmers, the Department of Environmental Conservation, and DNR concerning this bill. There are currently changes that are in the works. These concerns are being addressed. Changes that will occur in the next iteration of this bill that will be worked through with all interested parties as soon as the work draft is out will include language in Section 1 that worried farmers that the Department of Agriculture and Food would have the right to come into their properties and basically inventory food supplies. That may be a bit overreaching, and our office agrees with them on that, that we will make this a voluntary program and make it as easy as possible. Also in Section 1, DEC wanted language to be qualified that the Department of Agriculture and Food would probably not be providing technical assistance to food processors. We agree with that. That will be a language change. In Section 5, we address fish. That language made Department of Fish and Game a little nervous because that's under their purview. It will be readdressed as fish products and those that fall under the purview of DEC. So we will get Fish and Game will not be influenced by this legislation. Section 18, the definition of real retail food will be expanded and moved from Title 3 into Title 17. I've talked with the drafter, and we agree that's probably where it belongs, and it will be a cleaner move. Section 41, we had some questions about non-agricultural food and what exactly that is. We are currently working with DEC to get a good definition on that so we can make the amendments. And we believe Section 49 is where the definition of food establishments and should be, because that's where it is actually regulated. That would clean up Title 3. Section 75 again deals with retail food and non-agricultural food processors. That's something we're still working through with DEC to figure out if we can get alignment there and exactly what we are talking about. DNR has expressed some general concerns about this bill. They feel that the Division of Agriculture is still a good fit underneath their department, and that is their main concern. This bill is really a work in progress. We plan to get the next CS out, share it with all the departments, the interested parties, and keep it as a work in progress. And Representative Thompson believes that this is sound policy to create this new department, and we thank you for support of 191.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I've read through the letters of support and opposition, and I want to first of all congratulate you for including some of opposition, because a lot of people don't do that, and I think it's a fair approach to take, so I'm glad you did it. But there are a couple letters in here that don't have contact information, one that doesn't even have a name on it. Just says sent via email, and I don't know if it was inadvertent or not, but for myself, I don't even want to get something that somebody hasn't signed and put contact information on, because to me that's the same as a kind of anonymous thing, and I'm not interested in it at all.
Representative Gardner, through the chair, that was probably my fault, and that I took it out of a string of emails and neglected to include that.
Okay.
And I will make sure there is a copy of the letter with whoever sent it to me.
That's okay. Thank you. It's just the point I wanted to make, so I did read them. But.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to add that on one of these emails, the name came on the second page, and that's the only thing on the second page. So I don't know if the second page didn't get included, but that was that. And Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, the sectional that you just went through was existing sectional. Then you went through a new. You kind of went through some of the changes that were taking place. Do we have a copy of that? I wasn't able to keep up as fast as you were going.
Representative Tuck, I'll be more than happy to provide you with a copy of that through the chair. And the sectional, it's a six-page sectional. I figured you didn't want me to go through it piece by piece by piece by piece.
Yeah, no, here for hours. I wasn't able to keep up as fast as your conversation. I was trying to flip through the pages quick enough. But, if you don't
through the chair, Representative Tuck, I will email everybody on the committee the overview I did and the corrected letter of support or opposition, whichever it was.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Jane, in the first packet, we had a set of documents from the revolving loan fund that we told were not accurate. And I believe we've received additional information, but we have some questions regarding the differences between those two. I believe Representative Thompson has some questions, and as do I, but who would be the most appropriate person, Francie or?
Chair Olson, I believe the person who could answer this best is Francie and her numbers person.
And what?
And her numbers person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
I believe we have Francie online, don't we? Francie Habermeister, are you with us?
Yes, I am, sir.
We have several questions for you that are related to the information that we got on February 28th, and I think Representative Thompson will start off with his list, and then I'll probably finish up.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Francie, is the Board of Agriculture and Conservation responsible for managing the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund and its assets?
Through the chair, yes, it is.
To follow up,
certainly.
Chair, did they pass a resolution requesting that the fund be recapitalized?
I do not believe they have, but I would have to verify that.
I had heard that they did. I was just wondering why would it need to be recapitalized if it was a revolving loan fund?
Through the chair, it does continue to revolve, and I believe that discussion was held. I don't know if they actually passed a resolution or not, but they were looking for future requests if the requests were to increase. Currently, we are able to meet the need of the ag community.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair. There's a sudden drop in the paperwork I have in projected loan activity for fiscal year 2010, it was $3,285,000, in 11, $2,400,000, and then in 12, $1,500,000. Why the large sudden drop?
I believe that was based on historical information. The ARLF loan rates were dropped, and we did see a lot of refinances, which shows activity, but it's not actual cash out of the fund.
Go ahead.
Back to the difference in the cash flow projections, can you describe the difference between the two sets of numbers?
Have I described them? No, I have not. We just had an error that was submitted through this office that did not go through support services, so we requested support services do a new financial projection, and that is the one that is currently in the packet.
Can you tell us who prepared that document?
The second document?
Yeah.
Chris Cowles Brenton, who is located in support services within DNR.
And what variables are included in the that particular set of cash flow projections? Would that be the future sale of Matt Bade? or how are you handling that made at this point in time?
Right, the blow mold facility. I do not know if those projections were included, but the difference between the initial projection and the second projection was the fact that revenue was not included in that initial projection.
Is there any refinance of bad debts included in that?
I do not believe so.
Mr. Chair, I think that some of us don't know what document we're talking about here.
Jane?
Representative Gardner, if you look in your packet, there's a session dealing with the Alaska Revolving Loan Fund. There was a document that originally came out that was projections on this.
Can you just show me what it looks like? I see it.
Representative Gardner, there are quite a few numbers. There are numbers that were put through in the governor's budget.
Okay.
And then there are also numbers that were put through by the department. The original one came from the Department of Natural Resources. We were told it wasn't correct. We pulled it offline, and we got corrected numbers from the department.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, maybe the are other people looking for this document?
Thank you. Oh, wow. It's not in there. Yeah, I haven't seen this. Thank you.
Representative Gardner, through the chair, I will be glad to supply you with numbers, and I have just some of the pages that...
Thank you. I'm just trying to follow the conversation. Oh, yeah.
Any further questions for Francie? We also have online available for questions are Bryce Wrigley, Alaska Farm Bureau, and Seth Biasung from the Department of Law, if anybody chooses to pursue that. And we also have Kristen Ryan, DEC online. Anyway, I'm going to open it up to public testimony at this point in time, unless there are any more committee questions of the sponsor's representative. Thanks, Jane. You're temporarily off the hook. And is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, is there anybody online?
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is the Matsu. We have someone here.
Might that be Sig Restad? Restad?
That's correct.
Oh, please state your name and affiliation, and thank you for taking the time to join us today.
I'm Sig Restad. I'm master of the Northland Pioneer Grange in Palmer, and on the executive committee for the state grange. And I have some personal comments that are just mine. we are in favor of the bill as it's moving on at the present time. The Grange discussed their meeting at the H.R. 2191 at their last meeting, and came to the conclusion that we should support it at this stage of development. It does some good things, like moving those directly related activities under one department, and should make things smoother for not only the agricultural people, but for the various state organizations that you need to work with in other parts of the country and USDA. It is good that it's worked out, and so that there will be ample time for getting the thing put together, and because there's going to be some transitions that will certainly take some time and work out the relationships between existing departments and the new Department of Agriculture. That's the main things we have that were discussed at the Northern Finer Grange last meeting, and we will be following the legislation as it progresses. And I have a couple of things to speak about on my half. Well, there's one other thing from the Grange. The Grange has been following legislation and working with it since it was established in 1934, and we continue to do so, and this hopefully with our support it will move through the rural community more smoothly. And I have some personal comments, as I was Director of Agriculture from 1962 to 1968, and had the pleasure of working with many states in their ag departments, and working with sections that were not in a particular state department. And I seemed to always have better luck if I was working with a state or a program that had a head like a department status. It was more difficult and oftentimes more expensive to work with, something equivalent to DEC rather than working with a department. I could call up the director or secretary of agriculture on a first name basis and get to the right place at the right time and with much quicker development of support of a program, or else maybe not support depending on the conditions. And farmers and otherwise that require working with agricultural directions, it should make it easier for them rather than going from one department to the next to get their problem solved. Even the USDA programs, it works out the same as I mentioned for state programs. I always have a good working relationship with the Department of Agriculture, and when you got to activities that were not within the U.S. Department of Agriculture, working relationships became more complex. I feel that if this was put together realistically, it would work more smoothly and in the long run probably save the states some money. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to address them. I don't have any more direct comments, but if my experiences would help you in any way, I'm available. I'm kind of a not employed, retired statesman because I retired in 1987, but I'm happy to work with anyone if I can offer any help. Those are my direct comments, and hopefully there's someone else that can call in and support this legislation.
Actually, I think may be. Thanks again, Sig. John Poirier, are you with us, Alaska State Grange?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name and affiliation, and if I could ask you to keep it brief, we're going to attempt to move the bill out today, and we're getting close to the clock, but appreciate you participating today, but please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is John Poirier. I am president of the Alaska State Grange, and I appreciate the comments that Sig just made. Sig is one of our strong members. My comment this morning is not going to be on any specific details of the bill, but just to state affirmatively that the Alaska State Grange is in support of this. It's based on two principles. One, and the first principle is just the basics of how human societies got organized and put together. And in general, it was the development of agriculture that moved humans from the nomadic hunting and gathering lifestyle to this community lifestyle. As Alaskans, we're always going to be dependent on the notions of harvesting natural resources that abound in the state. But that's a totally different operation and management approach and regulatory approach to managing those kind of resources. Agriculture results from the effort of people who produce food products very efficiently to support a general population. And this is a key industry in society of especially importance in Alaska to reduce our dependency on many of the most basic food supplies. We strongly believe in the idea of grown in Alaska, not flown in. And the second one is that it just made sense to have a departmental level governmental agency involved with such an important piece of our economy. Most other states treat it this way and give it this level of importance. HB 191 essentially consolidates existing governmental functions into a single cohesive department. We believe this is in the best interest of the state and will eventually result in some efficiencies and maybe perhaps some dollar economies. That's all I had planned to say. I appreciate your time in allowing me to speak on behalf of the Alaska State Grange.
Thank you very much. We have one last person, and we're running out of time, so Bryce Wrigley, if you could keep it short, it'll help us, believe me. Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record, Bryce?
Yes. My name is Bryce Wrigley. I'm a president of the Alaska Bureau. And through the chair, I certainly appreciate the opportunity to address this topic. This has been a very important topic for all farmers. I want to clarify, this bill is not an indictment of DNR or Division of Ag. But I would like to clarify a couple of things. All of us eat. All of us are affected by transportation breakdowns. And all of us have experienced the disruptions on a regular basis. And we can continue to expect additional interruptions, some of which in the future could be very major. There's a serious need to address food security in Alaska by raising more in the state. And setting this as a goal of the new department, it is important that the new department have the freedom to pursue and accomplish this independent of how this goal fits in with the larger DNR's focus. A key to putting more Alaskan food on the table is the need to develop a business climate that encourages many small and medium-sized farmers to produce and to process food. Our goal is to create a more focused and efficient agency capable of working with producers, with farmers, to develop a food source for Alaska that will benefit not only those along the road system, but also those who live in remote rural areas by drastically cutting the length of their food chain. So I certainly appreciate those people who have testified in the past. Their comments are spot on, and I endorse those wholeheartedly. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much, Bryce. And with that, we have nobody else online. We have nobody else in the room that cares to testify, although we do have OMB for questions also in the room. And with that, I'll close out public testimony and bring it back to the committee for discussion. Representative Thompson.
Yeah, I don't know who this question should go to OMB or to DEC, but looking at their figures, it looks like that the personnel services expenditures projected for 2012 is $512,375 for the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund. That's a heck of a lot of money to administer $1.5 million in projected loans. I mean, I just don't understand why that we've got these numbers that we're looking at the last few days. They don't always meld together very well. And I don't know who should answer that question.
How about Jane?
Through the chair, Jane Pearson. I am probably not the person to ask on this. I have gotten many comments from different people who are probably a lot wiser than I on the Alaska Revolving Loan Fund. I began recently looking at some of the numbers, and they interested me too, and that's something I plan to pursue as it moves on. So. And I did want to clarify while I'm here that we are on the M version, and that is the one we're currently before us. Yes. even though there's work still being done on this version, the M version is the version before the committee.
John, do you want to take a shot at it?
I'd have to defer to the department.
Okay.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, with that, I'll bring it back to the committee.
Chair, where does this get referred to next? Eventually, it'll go through
planning. It's going to resources. If we move it out of committee, and they're planning on devoting interim to fleshing it out. It's going to be an extremely long and complicated process, and they've apparently volunteered to. We won't be doing it in this committee, if that's
right. I'd be comfortable with moving it out and then having that question be brought up on at resources.
I believe Jane's started the list of questions for the next committee, assuming we move it out. But was that a motion?
I want to make a quick comment real quick, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair. And, you know, when you look at the agriculture in the United States, we've what we used to call reserves for times of emergency. Unfortunately, we dumped those reserves on the markets, and we called them surpluses and dumped those, and we damaged our farmers, and we no longer have food reserves like we used to in case of natural catastrophes, war, anything to protect our nation. And I think that, you know, I'm totally against the Central America Free Trade Agreement, because what the North America Free Trade Agreement did in eliminating our manufacturing base here in America, the Central America Free Trade Agreement is eliminating our agricultural base in America. And you never want to rely on another country for your food supply. And because Alaska is remote and we do have to go through another country for land transportation to get to the rest of the lower 48, I think it's very important for us to start having our own agricultural base here in Alaska. I think the forecast has been 3 days, or 3 to 8 days, I can't remember what it is. It might be 8 days of food supply that we have in case we have a catastrophe that might wipe out some of our ports where we can't get shipment coming in. You know, if we see a tsunami like what happened in Japan, we see something like that here, we've got to be able to rely on ourselves. And I know that Department of Natural Resources is doing what they can with the Division of Agriculture. I think that this bill helps emphasize the importance of agriculture and sets up conditions to make sure that we protect agriculture, not only protect it, but actually start moving in the right direction for that. I know there's a lot of work still to be done on this bill. I'm not interested in holding it up at all, but I will commit to the sponsor that I'm going to become as much of an expert on this subject as possible to help this go through, because this is really important, and it's really the foundation to everything else that we do for the economy. And so with that, just a few comments on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that HB 191 version 27-LS0458/ M be moved from committee with individual recommendations. And does this count as a fiscal note?
Oh, no, there are fiscal notes.
There are fiscal notes.
Attached fiscal notes.
Okay. Right. Questionable.
Is there any opposition? Seeing no opposition, the bill will move out of committee, and we're adjourned at 9:34.